If not, why don't we turn to the next item on the agenda, which is the post-implementation review of IAS 13. Henry, I'll turn it back to you.
Paper 1C. This is the review of the due process that's been undertaken on the post-implementation review of IFRS 13, which is our standard on how to do fair value measurement and required disclosures. This PIR started in 2016, and we're obviously coming to the end of the process. Some of you on the committee are new, obviously, and maybe the first time you've come across post-implementation reviews, but it is our formal process that we have. When effectively what we're doing is we're checking that the standard is working as intended. So is it providing useful information to users and it's not giving rise to any significant unexpected costs in practice? So the paper is designed to provide you with an overview of the process the board has applied following the requirements in the due process handbook. And just to give you a quick recap of how this has progressed, there's basically been two phases. The first phase started in 2016, and it was very much a data gathering exercise from a wide range of stakeholders. And that allowed us to effectively identify the four main areas that we wanted to focus on in the second phase of the PIR, and you can see those areas in paragraph 9 of the paper. And so then we used three main tools to gather the information to help us with the assessment. We undertook a public consultation by publishing a request for information in May 2017. We also undertook an academic research review. I mean, I say we undertook, we actually commissioned it from a team, an independent team of academics. And we also undertook further outreach, really focus on users' financial statements to give us that user perspective feedback on these areas we wanted to get feedback on. And the board considered all of the feedback it gathered in phase two. In a series of, I think it was 8 agenda papers at the start of this year. And then the board effectively had further analysis presented to it in March of this year, where it assessed the findings and considered whether or not there were any follow-up steps. So paragraph 16 of this paper summarizes the board's assessment that the standard is working as intended and it's providing useful information to users with no unexpected cost, albeit, and as expected, there are challenges in its application. In terms of the next steps, which are summarized in paragraph 17 of the paper, the board has decided to use the findings about the usefulness of the disclosures, of the fair value disclosures, in two of its current projects. So, in its primary financial statements project, you can consider some of the feedback it received about aggregation of information under IFRS 13 when it's considering the topic of disaggregation. And in the disclosure initiative, in particular, we have a standards level review going on of how to effectively write better disclosure requirements in our standards. One of the standards that's been targeted in that review is IFRS 13. Using that as a test case. So that's an opportunity to consider some of the feedback that we've received from the PIR about the disclosures in IFRS 13. And also the PIR has highlighted the importance of us continuing our liaison with the valuation profession, in particular with the International Valuation Standards Council, because some of the findings really point to a need for some more guidance, but that's really valuation guidance that would be better done by those parties rather than us. Now, the appendix of the paper lays out the various due process steps and how the board has complied with that due process. And we've also provided you with a draft of the report that we will be eventually issuing. So this is a draft. It's not in the public domain because it's being circulated around the board members for review. So the question for you this morning is really asking whether you're satisfied the board has completed satisfactorily the post-implementation review of IFRS 13, and that subject to the board completing its review of the report and feedback statement, that report can be published to our stakeholders.
Any questions, Sheila?
Can I just ask a question generally? About 2 years since it began, and I assume that's probably the normal time frame to do these. I'm just curious, if something major arose, like a major issue was identified, is there a mechanism to be able to deal with that more quickly than to wait for 2 years to go by?
I mean, in terms of the timeline before we started or the overall process?
No, I'm just saying, suppose there had been a major implementation issue that was discovered or huge costs that weren't affected.
We don't even need to wait for a person implementation review. So we issue the standard, we allow practice to develop, but obviously if something emerged, and it may be that it comes to the Interpretations Committee or something like that, but certainly we could, there's nothing to stop us taking the appropriate response, which could be from standard setting.
Much earlier. Yeah, good. And we, in fact, did
Sue, do you want to add something?
Yeah, when we did the narrow scope amendment to IFRS 9, when it was now, late last year, that was because of a sort of unintended consequence that was picked up even before the effective date.
But I think overall we think it's good to allow the standard to have a bed in time before you rush in and do this review. And also, you wouldn't have sufficient data to reach really well-formed judgments, particularly the academic research takes time to come through.
The way I would think of it is the purpose of the post-implementation review is to make sure that in the ordinary course we are going back and looking at our work, or the board is going back and looking at its work. But there's nothing that prevents us from leaping into the fray much more quickly if that's what's called for. This is the one action item in front of the committee today, and this paper, I think, provides a pretty detailed summary of all the steps that the board has taken, cross-references them against the handbook. I've actually gone back and checked those cross-references. I think these are the steps that the handbook requires. And the staff has indicated to us that in their view, all of the steps have been taken, and we have this paper that reflects that. Questions, Guillermo?
I am pretty comfortable with the due process. I had a question just reflecting on, without knowing what happened when you were issuing the standard, was this standard contentious at the time and there was a lot of noise around it? Because now with the post-implementation review, it seems that everyone's fine with it. So I was just wondering, how is that different from the moment that this was issued? And I'm just asking this because maybe it's because change is difficult, but once we stick to the principles, things just take their course. So I was just wondering, how contentious was this at the time it was issued?
I think one thing to remember with this standard was it wasn't changing where fair value is required. It was very much a standard designed to actually help people and give people a better framework for determining fair values when our standards already required it. So in that respect, it was very much helpful guidance being provided to stakeholders, actually. Okay. So, and we obviously had to measure that quite carefully because of sometimes thought this was about fair value. In terms of when it was required. So I don't think there were particularly, very contentious standards at the time. But certainly when we go about doing a post-implementation review, one of the things that we do is we go back into the development of the standard and we think about any areas that were particularly sensitive.
Larry?
Yeah, related to that, two things. One, related to Guillermo's point, I guess in the UK there has been criticism, and Hans has done a very good job of sort of pushing back on the criticism And so I guess the question is there anything more that we can be doing to educate journalists and others before they go off and, you know, write these articles that then take on a life of their own in terms of the criticisms of fair value accounting? It would be going backwards to the dark ages do otherwise, or to do so. And so I'm not sure if there's anything more we could be doing. But the other point, Alan, to your point, thanks for going back and cross-checking that we did cover off all the requirements. But it would be helpful for the staff, Henry, to specifically make that point, because that was a question. It looked like everything was done, but I didn't go back and cross-check. And it would be helpful to just confirm that.
Yeah, I can confirm that effectively, you know, we went through the requirements and here did the table. We're comfortable that all of the steps that should have been undertaken have been undertaken.
Sue?
Larry raises a good, more general question. Hans has been battling valiantly to try and address the issues being raised in the press. But I think, it, to Henry's point, a lot of that is about questioning when we use fair value, whereas the standards about how you do it when we've asked you to do it. So I think it's a slightly different point.
Thank you, Sue. Teresa?
I just wanted to come back to the point of when is an appropriate time to start a... Sorry, could you hear me? Sorry. I just want to come back to the very small point of when is the appropriate time to start a post-implementation review, because when I first looked at this paper, I thought, oh my God, the IFRS 13 came into effect in 2013, and that was, you know, quite a lump of time ago. And then I looked at the results, and they are all pretty mild. I mean, there's no kind of serious problems in terms of whether the standard was working as intended. And I just wondered whether, if there had been problems, then they all came out at the beginning and people have got used to it. So the question I have is this, you know, is there any rule or principle whereby one has adopted in terms of when you start a post-implementation review, or is it a case by case, and how is this time frame fit with, you know, these reviews in the past, and whether they're in line with the time frame that's been done before?
I think the handbook formally says that it's, you know, PIR would maybe typically start 2 to 3 years after, but I do think it's very much case by case. I think the important point is that we are, you know, we're well connected into what is going on with implementation after we issue a standard. But also, obviously, when you issue a new standard, there's lots of new words. There is an initial sense of, you know, that it almost like creates this impression there are more challenges than there really are. It just takes time for practice to sort of settle down and get to grips with it. And so I personally think that's why it's quite important to allow some time for the standard to bed in, because it's not just us, you know, who are involved here. There's a lot of parties out there who are helping to get, you know, really good implementation of these standards. And it just, there are natural processes that things just have to work through. So I think it's a case of, you know, considering on a case-by-case basis. But, you know, we're going to have to think about this with these major new standards that we've just issued. But obviously, rushing into that, you know, wouldn't be the right thing to do. And we have been responding to the questions arising, the challenges that are arising. You know, I mentioned insurance contracts as a good example. We're already, you know, considering the feedback that we're picking up from all of our various sources at this time.
Yeah, I think it's important to be to think about post-implementation reviews and their timing against the backdrop of sort of why, as a policy matter, they came into, why the idea of putting it in something like the due process handbook came into existence. And every regulator and standard setter has this issue. And if there's a firestorm of protest about a standard when people start to implement it, the standard setter will something. It's in fact the cases where things are pretty quiet, and preparers especially have for a long time criticized standard setters and regulators for not going back and thinking about their work and whether they did a good job or a bad job and whether they could do a better job. It's, you know, rules get passed and then they sit there for 25 years. Nobody goes back and looks at them, decide whether or not they made sense or they still make sense or whatever. The origin of a mandatory post-implementation review was really to deal with that issue. And against that backdrop, sort of waiting for practice to settle in and waiting for 2 or 3 years before you jump in and do something is, I think, kind of a sensible outgrowth of the purpose. Michelle? Madeline?
Thank you. Quick question on the process. In paragraph 9, there's a list of the items that were identified as sort of the focus of the phase of the consultation. In general term, is there a risk by narrowing the questions or the focus, you sort of, you know, some of the problems may not emerge as a result of that? And the second question I would have is, I took Appendix A actually as a cross-reference between what was supposed to happen and what happened. Am I mistaken?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
On that part. On your first point, yes, although we narrowed down the frame of reference based on the initial research, that was obviously considering very open-ended questions about what are the challenges, what are the questions. But even in the request for information, people had an opportunity to comment on other aspects of the standard, even though the questioning was focused and targeted on some specific areas.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Okay. Can we go back to Henry's question, which is the item for us, which is the committee satisfied based on the materials that it has and based on the staff's statements that upon the completion of the paper by the board, the necessary due process steps will have been followed? I see nodding of heads. Perhaps for the transcript will be easier. Does anyone disagree? Hearing nothing, conclude that the committee agrees with the statement.